Kevin Doyle is here. The British actor is known to many as Mr. Joseph Molesley, the often down-on-his-luck comedy relief valet and footman. His pride, folly, and awkward attempts at love made him a fan favorite in the long-running TV series and both Downton Abbey films. Here is Kevin Doyle as Mr. Molesley.
How old were you when you left school?
12. Oh, a shame, really. I was quite bright. And my dad wanted me to stay on. He thought I could be a teacher, if that doesn't make you laugh. But of course, he couldn't manage it. We had no money, you see.
Along with his successful run on Downton Abbey, Kevin Doyle has enjoyed a celebrated career, including a character in the fantasy drama The Witcher, and British series like Sherwood, Happy Valley, and Paranoid. He even showed up on the cherished UK soap Coronation Street. He's also been a mainstay of London's West End on stage. Kevin's latest undertaking is the David Haig play Pressure, which just opened at the Royal Alexandra Theatre in downtown Toronto. The piece is set in a weather war room of sorts, just 72 hours before the D-Day invasion in June of 1944. Doyle portrays meteorologist Dr. James Stagg. The Scottish weather expert and military man has been asked by the Allied forces generals to make a prediction. Will the weather be calm enough for D-Day? 350,000 lives are at stake, and the decision to attack comes down to the most important weather forecast of all time. Here's a moment from Pressure.
I'm a scientist, for God's sake, not a gambler. But that's what they're making us do, gamble with 350,000 lives at stake.
Kevin Doyle is joined by the members of the original award-winning London's West End cast, including Olivier nominee Malcolm Sinclair as General Dwight D. Ike Eisenhower and Laura Rogers as Lieutenant Kay Summersby. It runs through March 5th. Tickets at Mervish.com. I sat down with Kevin Doyle earlier this week at the Royal Alexandra Theatre. Kevin Doyle, welcome to the New Classical FM and the Oasis here in Toronto.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm looking forward to experiencing my first Canadian winter.
You're getting a little taste of it this week. Finally,
I'm so looking forward to it.
It's been very mild, I have to say. So you've come just in time. First of all, I just want to say congratulations on this production. It is such a compelling piece. Wonderful celebrated cast that you've joined here, and we just love seeing it over the weekend, so congrats.
Oh, thank you. It's a wonderful story. And it's a story which is kind of unknown, really, as well, isn't it? Which is also the
fact that nobody
knew about this.
Yeah. It has been celebrated for close to a decade. David Haig wrote it and performed it in London. Both your CVs on stage, film, television, we just heard about teeming with these well-loved titles and productions. Why did you want to go after this character, meteorologist Dr. James Stagg?
I don't do theatre very often, and I give myself a bit of a talking to occasionally. It's really useful to do stuff that you're a little scared of. A lot of creative people, I think, would agree with me that there's something rather compelling about doing something that you're scared of.
Right.
As I get older, the idea of sort of dressing up and pretending to be somebody in front of 900 people a night is quite a scary prospect, especially as, you know, unlike in front of a camera, if you go wrong, can I just do that again?
Right.
You can't do that in front of 900 people. The awareness of that becomes sort of scarier and scarier as I get older. But I confront it and I think, oh, no, I've got to do it. So I come back to theatre very occasionally. And I just thought it was a brilliant story and a wonderful person that I wanted to show to a wider audience. David Haig has written a beautiful play and he's discovered this beautiful man as well, who's clearly under, pun intended, under a lot of pressure.
He really is.
Professionally and personally.
Did you feel like you could put your own stamp on the character? Because I don't know if I'm right about this, but just looking at clips over the last couple nights, it does feel like maybe a slightly different tone than what David did. Maybe in some of the intensity.
I'm sure it was, yeah.
The intensity, I think, particularly.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. I think he would have... But that's the great thing about doing theatre, isn't it? About doing... I can easily imagine at least a dozen actors doing this part, and they'd all be very different. The most scary part of this process so far has been doing it in front of David when there were only maybe three or four other people in the room.
Sure.
So, because he'd done over 300 performances of it. And so doing it in front of him was if I got through, well, I got through that, so I can get through anything now.
I don't know if I'm wrong, but he seems like an awfully nice guy. So
oh, he's a lovely man.
Yeah.
So I very supportive.
Feel good about that.
Yeah, and was very, I didn't feel under any pressure to sort of follow the template that he had created over a number of years with this part. So just do what you want to do. And that was great.
So just to give the listeners a sense of what is going on here, military base in the UK, 72 hours until D-Day, the Allied generals have convened, including General Eisenhower. There's an American weather specialist and your character, a Scottish meteorologist. It's a grave, grave situation, literally hundreds of thousands of lives at stake. And it all comes down to your prediction of what the weather will be like for the scheduled landing on D-Day. So Dr. Stagg is beyond stressed. His wife is having their second child. The fate of the world in many ways in his hands. I mean, it just seems too true to be real.
I know, doesn't it? Doesn't it? And it's probably the most important forecast, weather forecast in history.
Right.
If you think about it, 350,000 men are waiting to cross the channel. They're going to, you know, hopefully liberate Europe. The crossing involves 7,000 naval vessels. Just imagine that, 7,000. You can only imagine the amount of organization that took.
For the first hour of this play, you have to display this very intense energy, and it's palpable. We feel it when you're up there. And how are you with putting yourself in that position night after night? Because I just get worried about your blood pressure. It just seems very, very intense to be in that guy. Yeah.
It's all pretend. It's fine. It's
it doesn't
fine.
Look pretend.
No. Well, that's the craft, isn't it? Making it look as if it really... But it's just a brilliant, compelling story. And he believes so much in what he has to say. As you said earlier, you know, there's an American meteorologist who is absolutely convinced that the weather is going to be a fine sunny day, as it has been for weeks on end in this long British summer. But this rather troublesome Scot comes along and says, well, I think I know British weather better than you do, and I've got a surprise for you, and it's not necessarily very good news. And so he knows the impact that imparting those facts are going to be, and, you know, the possible consequences, because everything had to be aligned meteorologically. Everything had to be aligned for the invasion to be successful. There had to be a full moon. There had to be spring tide, had to coincide with the early hours of the morning. And the idea of delaying, the consequences would have been terrible, because not only would you have to disembark 350,000 men, as I said earlier, the fact that 7,000 naval vessels have come together, people are going to notice that. The Germans were going to notice that.
That's right.
The secret would have been blown. And so the extraordinary pressure, not just that he was under, but that Eisenhower and all the other sort of, you know, the top officials were under, to sort of get this thing done. As one of the characters says, let's just get on the beach. Doesn't matter what the sacrifices are, whatever the, sort of the human cost is, let's get on the beach and then the war is over eventually.
So you don't need to put together some decompression exercise after these performances?
No, just a glass of wine afterwards.
Just a glass of wine. It is interesting to me how the science community, people who've been touched by war, people who maybe had relatives involved with D-Day, and so there's this flocking around this piece beyond just pure entertainment. It has a lot of meaning. And
I'll tell you what, there's a moment towards the end of the play when Eisenhower finds out, he discovers the human cost on the early hours of D-Day. There's clearly a resonance on this side of the Atlantic with the figures that he comes up with, because, you know, there would have been Canadians and Americans involved in that. And so, and you can kind of feel, unlike back home in Britain, you can kind of feel a reaction in the audience. And it's really, it's palpable from the stage, actually.
I'll touch on one of your other calling cards for just a moment, Mr. Molesley. Beloved on Downton Abbey, we mentioned how intense Dr. Stagg is for the first section of this production. So sort of a step away from this well-known character, just for audiences who are coming here.
And well, that's the lovely thing about my business, really, is sort of being an actor. You sort of get to experience or step into the shoes of different people. That's what attracts me to acting. Not wanting to be one character all the time. James Stagg is very different to Mr. Molesley.
Yeah. Is it at the point in your career, I mean, there's been so many television titles, film titles. You've been back and forth on stage. You must be at the point now where it is, you hold the decision for what it is you're going to
an extent, yes. Yeah.
Or maybe people come to you and say, well, this would be the right thing.
Yeah, to an extent. I've got to a point in my career where I can kind of, I don't have to work, which is nice. so I don't...
Sign me up for that.
Yeah, I know, isn't it lovely? So no, I don't have to, which is lovely. It means you can be selective about the work that you do. Yeah. But this play had such an impact on me when I read it, despite all the postponements that we've had to go through with, you know, world events and what have you. I kind of stuck with it because I really wanted to do it. So I'm so pleased. The Mervishes allowed it to sort of go ahead.
Worth the wait. And I'll mention, too, we play John Lund's score for Downton Abbey quite often on the program.
Okay.
You can imagine. People write in with very, very fond requests for it and all the memories. What's your reflection on that part of your career now? It was so successful. It was so pervasive in the culture. People get so attached to these characters.
I know.
And so you do carry it with you.
Oh, yeah, yes. Yeah. I mean, it enables me to do things like this. And
sure.
Every single one of our lives, you know, all the company of actors in that show, you know, it's changed our lives. It's enabled us to do things which I suppose it's become a calling card. And so it's enabled us to sort of branch out and do other things. And as you said, sort of be more selective about what we do next. But it's been an absolute joy. What a gift. I mean, none of us anticipated the success that the show became. It became a sort of a phenomena, really, didn't it?
It just, the word got out, and certainly here in the colonies, we heard.
Yeah.
Everybody started watching.
Yeah, so now when we sort of promote the movies, people talk about it being a franchise. And I think, oh, we're a franchise now. Shouldn't I have a cape or something like that?
You should, at least a superpower.
Yeah, some kind of superpower. Yeah.
We are about to play a piece from the latest Downton film here. Were you lucky enough to be part of that South of France shoot?
No.
What a shame. I forgot.
I know. Well, that again, you know, that was shot during difficult times with COVID and everything. So we weren't even sure if they'd get to France. So there were all kinds of sort of fallbacks in place in case we couldn't travel, but they could travel, and it looked absolutely glorious.
It really did. Well, I feel bad that didn't work out. But a lot has happened for this cast, and I think as you just pointed out, everyone is more famous than when they started. And I think fans would like to think when the group gets back together, it all is hearts and flowers. But I would have to think it's a little more complicated than that. There's lots of egos.
No, not at all. It really is. Because what is it now? It's 12 years since we started, and we all stay in touch with one another. And so we're all giddy when we get back together. It really is. It's an extraordinary experience, and it's an experience because it's unprecedented in our lives, and it's very rare for British actors, certainly, to sort of be together for such a long period of time.
Right.
And so whenever we do get back together, it's just sort of it's wonderful.
Third film?
There's every possibility.
It's going to be a little different this time.
It will be. Yeah. If it happens, it will be different. Yeah. Who knows?
All right. Kevin Doyle, you are so great in this play. We just enjoyed it so much. We're lucky to have you here in Toronto. So thank you for taking a few minutes with us.
Thank you.